Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are on the threshold of fall, and temperatures are a little more brisk, the days are a little shorter, and there's a bit of a quickening of the blood as we enter a new season of Intelligent Medicine Podcast, which we hope you will enjoy. Today, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions can be sent to us at radioprogram@AOL.com. And with me is my partner in crime, hopefully not crime, Layla Mudin, who is part of my practice here in Manhattan, where we see patients on a regular basis. How are you, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. Enjoying the weather. How about you?
Yeah, it's brisk, and it was a long pants day. It was a long pants day.
Yeah.
So, short sleeve, but long pants. But pleasant, and it's kind of a lift. And, you know, what has really been nice is for running. Running is kind of a slog in the middle of the summer, and we've had mercifully cool weather this summer. But, you know, you got to get up early in the morning to have a good run. And now, temperatures are actually pretty decent in the morning.
Yes.
So you don't have to get up at, you know, get out there and put your sneakers on before seven so that you don't swelter while running. So, it's a good time for getting out there and getting active. Those of you who are heat averse, you can, do a little walking, get out there, do some hiking. It's a great time of year.
Yeah.
Unless you're in certain parts of the country that have been stricken by cataclysmic weather. Gee, it's really been wild.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Our hearts go out to you.
Oh, indeed. Goodness. So there's lots of stories this week. You know, before we get into questions, you know, I just surveyed my Facebook page. And there's a bunch of stories that I posted of interest, but I wanted to focus on one in particular. A few days ago, we had this one. Clinical trial finds diet works for depression. All right. Well, duh, right? The duh story of the month, right?
Yeah.
We've been talking about, you know, there's this whole branch of integrative medicine called orthomolecular medicine, which was pioneered in the 60s and 70s. And it was Roger Wilkins, what's his name, the trailblazer in that. This is an early concept from the time that I've been involved in integrative medicine, is that you can actually impact mood with supplements and with diet. And so research in what is called BMC medicine, a randomized control study called the SMILES trial. I love that. That's an acronym that they somehow came up with. Okay, so they looked at 67 men and women with moderate to severe depression, and they were on a relatively unhealthy diet, which is not uncommon for patients with depression, right? You know, they kind of eat junk food, and there's not a lot of motivation to eat well.
And they're looking to self-medicate to feel better.
Yes.
And we
yes.
know that nobody's reaching for broccoli when you feel that way.
Candy, sugar, you know, get high off of food. Calories were not restricted.
Mm-hmm.
Body weight stayed the same. So it wasn't a weight loss diet. Interestingly, it was a modified Mediterranean diet. It cost about 19% less than the standard unhealthy diet. So it's, you know, you think of, you know, whole paycheck, you know, that concept that buying food at these effete natural chains like Whole Foods, Whole Foods really trying to
Whole Foods whole paycheck.
they're trying to turn that ship around with the Amazon acquisition of Whole Foods and make it more of a accessible eatery. But anyway,
Amazon, so friend or foe? Okay.
Modified med diet that they put these depressed people on. 37% carbohydrate. So it wasn't very low carbohydrate, relatively low carbohydrate.
It's
a lot lower.
That's almost a zone carbohydrate, which is more 40%.
Yeah. 40% fat. So more fat than carbohydrates. 18% protein. And there was a little allocation for alcohol, which really should not be part of the regimen of someone who's depressed.
But they not at all.
A little leeway, not 2%. You know, maybe Maximum 2 alcoholic drinks per day. That's a little too much, I think, for somebody who's depressed. But, you know.
It is.
That's harm reduction, because some people are really going for the booze when they're depressed. Okay, so what did they find? Well, they found that there was indeed a benefit in terms of mood. That's kind of cool. This is something we've known intuitively. And this is even without the addition of specific supplements. You know, there's B vitamins that can rev the brain, SAMI, which is beneficial, certain herbal agents like St. John's wort.
Fish oil.
Fish oil, omega-3 fatty acids, of course.
Cognumin, yeah.
So what was the cutting edge of this diet? Well, it was extremely low in refined carbohydrates, which put your blood sugar into a roller coaster. It contained plenty of natural fat and cholesterol, which the brain needs to function properly.
Yes.
It was low in processed oils, which might be pro-inflammatory.
Yeah.
And it contains animal sources of protein, which are building blocks for neurotransmitters, but also are sources of iron, zinc, and vitamin B12, which are certainly mood supportive. Okay?
Yes.
And it's whole foods, which are rich in polyphenols, which may have an anti-inflammatory effect and a, you know, sort of an overall beneficial effect on brain chemistry.
Yeah.
And so there you have it. Boom. Okay.
There we have it.
Probably
also
magnesium rich when you have a lot of
proteins
and vegetables.
Yeah. Well, just the elimination of sugar and other processed foods, you're going to keep more of the magnesium that you ingest from your whole foods, too. Otherwise, all that sugar, refined carbs are burning out the magnesium, the B vitamins as well. So
And I contrast this study with another study that just came out. And yet, it's the last in a series of studies that suggests that a vegan diet may be associated, and I underline the word associated, with depression, because the question is the chicken or the egg? Is it people who are a little bit more prone to depression maybe people are a little more emotionally sensitive, shall we say, might be more prone to go for a dietary extreme?
It's not the chicken or the egg, it's the tofu.
Right. Exactly. Well, chicken and the egg, I meant it in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
But the question is, do people who are a little bit more on the depressed end of the spectrum gravitate towards an extreme vegan diet? Or alternatively, is the diet bereft of certain nutrients that are essential for brain function? And I think there maybe is a little bit of both going on there.
Yes.
So,
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
So let's get to questions, please, before we...
Okay.
Because we could just riff for hours on all the new stories. Another one benefits of intravenous vitamin C. There's another one on, which I'll talk about on the weekend show. A keto diet may increase memory and reduce mortality. This is a rat study that showed it was mice.
Mm-hmm.
Mice on a high-fat versus high-carb diet, there was a 13% increase in median lifespan for the mice. That would translate to 7 to 10 years of additional life for humans.
Wow.
So, yeah, but most humans aren't rodents, with a few possible exceptions. So we can't necessarily extrapolate.
Yeah,
but we
have to be careful.
Benefit.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So we have an urgent question from Michael.
Okay.
Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm one of your greatest fans, and you like the questions I ask. Yes, we do, Michael. Thank you.
We're a sucker for your questions, Michael. You just tee up those high-hanging curveballs, and we hit them out of the park.
So Michael says, I take a variety of the supplements you recommend.
Okay.
Wonderful. What happened to Michael is, he said, I began to have a severe asthma attack, went to the hospital, couldn't see, you know, flashes of light, couldn't breathe. The ER
He saw the white light. Oh, my goodness, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, began to see flashes of light.
Yeah.
So the ER doctor prescribed 40 milligrams of prednisone for 10 days,
correct,
plus an increase in my Advair.
Correct treatment, yes.
Yeah. I hate to use oral steroids, but I need to breathe well.
Right.
His question is, what supplements can mitigate the negative effects of prednisone? And The ER doc said, I don't have to taper off the prednisone after stopping. Mm-hmm. Another once said that I do. What say you, Dr. Hoffman?
Well, let's attack the last question, is that I was traditionally trained when administering steroids that you should taper. You should do a slow or fast taper. So, mm-hmm. for example, I had a patient come in with a terrible, terrible skin itch problem yesterday in the office.
Yes.
And my response was to put her on steroids. But mm-hmm. I put her on 40 for 3 days, and then 35 for 3 days, and then 30 for 3 days. And that's what you call a slow taper. And the idea being is that you hit it hard, but you want to get off the steroids, but you don't want to go off precipitously, because if you do, the condition which occasioned the need for the steroids might flare up. And that's what mm-hmm. happens sometimes when you take people off steroids. They flare. So the idea is that you want to taper slowly. There may be something new in the medical literature about how it's not necessary to taper slowly. I haven't seen that in my readings, but ER doctors are hopefully au courant with all the latest trends in emergency treatment of conditions like asthma. So I'm not saying that that doctor is wrong. And there may be, you know, more than one way to skin the cat when it comes to that. But I would go for a slower taper. So what do you do to mitigate the bad effects of steroids? Well, conventional doctors sometimes give patients acid blocking medication because steroids tend to increase the risk for ulcers. But I don't like to do that because it's double trouble. You know, you've got a steroid and then you got yet another medication. You use a medication to treat the side effects of the previous medication.
Yeah.
So we might soothe the stomach with something like aloe gel or DGL. Mm-hmm. To protect the stomach lining, because mm-hmm. you know, you can get steroid-induced ulcers. The other thing that happens when you have take high-dose steroids is you may have sleep problems because you actually get a real dramatic reduction in your production of melatonin. Your high-dose steroids kill melatonin production in the brain, and so you might want to take 3 or 5 milligrams of melatonin nightly to help replace the melatonin that isn't getting made. Another thing you may want to take is some additional vitamin D because of the potential for steroids to cause osteoporosis, although short-term use of steroids should not do that. Another thing that gets knocked out when you take steroids is DHEA. Mm-hmm. And we see that very frequently. People are on steroids or have just recently been taken off, is that their adrenals remain suppressed and are not producing DHEA.
Yeah.
So I would take some DHEA to replace that.
Would you take the DHEA at the same time as tapering the prednisone?
Yes.
You would?
Not?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Why not?
What about phosphatidylcholine?
The rationale for that is
to help with the side effects of maybe the neurotransmitter activity. The additional choline may be helpful because prednisone tapers can often cause some emotional lability.
Oh yeah, no question. Yeah,
and things.
I'm not sure how to counteract that nutritionally. Really.
Okay.
You know, there are certain herbs that are what are called adaptogens, and they may help to support the adrenals after a patient is. If you've been on steroids for a while, your adrenals may remain suppressed. And so you may, at the end of the steroid period, take an adaptogen product. One of our favorites is called Adaptinol. It contains licorice, which actually supports the body's production of cortisol, which mm-hmm. has to return to normal after being suppressed. The only thing is you do not want to take that while you're taking prednisone, because taking licorice with prednisone is a very bad combination, because you'll get, it's a double whammy. It'll cause you sometimes to really get high blood pressure and deplete your potassium. So I think maybe certainly eating in a way that provides you with potassium, dietary potassium is important.
Yes.
Because prednisone may have the effect of impacting the sodium-potassium ratio. Certainly have less sodium, certainly have less sugar while you're on prednisone, although some people just want to eat like a house on fire and they really crave sweets while they're on prednisone.
It's the natural. Cravings are like nothing, it's nothing normal, right?
Yeah. Right. But you want to certainly, if you're especially going to be on steroids for a long time, try to eat preventively so that you can avoid that weight gain that occurs with steroids. Because being on steroids for even a couple of months, you can gain, 10, 15 pounds. So you want to maybe forestall that if your willpower will permit you to fend off those sweet cravings that steroids cause. And steroids certainly can cause diabetes, so you might want to take some additional chromium
to help good
with
idea.
Blood sugar control.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it could cause diabetes, you want to maintain a lower carbohydrate diet. And to support your adrenals, maybe eating every 3 hours or so, at least having snacks between your meals may also be helpful.
Yeah.
Save off craving. Wow.
It ain't great, but it's, your body voted and something kind of calamitous happened and you really need those steroids to get you over the hump. You had a life-threatening episode of asthma, so you really must take that medication.
Right, and thank heaven for it. Thank heaven for ER, right.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. High-tech medicine triumphs in this case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Michael, we hope you feel better soon. Thank you for this question, and we look forward to many more from you. Okay. We have an email from Brad. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I love your show. Karen, my girlfriend and longtime loyal listener, got me hooked. Where is the best place to store supplements in your home? Does it depend on the type of supplement? Your new fan, Brad.
Okay. Well, I recently had the occasion to, it was a couple of years now, to remodel my kitchen. And they said, well, with the additional space that we have, we can give you a bar refrigerator. And I said, well, I don't really drink much. And I drink even less now than I did then. And so I said, great, that bar refrigerator will come in handy because right now, all those supplements that I put in my regular refrigerator are competing with my food. So let me segregate, take all the supplements out of the regular refrigerator and put them into the bar refrigerator.
And there you go.
Now,
it's like a wine. Is it like a wine fridge? What you have?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a little wine fridge. I mean, it doesn't have the glass in front. It's not a fancy one. It's just a little, under the sink, mini fridge.
Keeping things at 58 degrees, right?
Exactly. It doesn't even keep the things at super cold. It's like 50.
It's meant for wine.
Degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that will help to preserve the shelf life of your supplements. Now, there's some supplements which are like the rock of ages. I mean, if you have a calcium supplement, it's stable, just like the White Cliffs of Dover. They're made of calcium carbonate, and they're hundreds of millions of years old. They're based on, old seashells, which descended to the bottom of the ocean, and then because of geologic shifting, they're now above the surface of the water. That's what limestone is, and that's what calcium carbonate is. It's probably the least absorbable form of calcium. But things like magnesium supplements and calcium supplements, they're pretty stable mineral supplements. But amino acids and oils and vitamin E and B vitamins and, you just in general, I'd like to keep the refrigerator. And just to make it easier, I just put everything in the refrigerator.
That's a good idea. I keep them in the door of the fridge most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
In winter, I'll probably take them out. The apartment's much cooler then. So that could be something.
That's
but keep
a,
them in a cool,
concept.
Dark, mm-hmm. keeping them in a dark place, a cool place, really the best way to go.
Right. And, certain things should be in a dark bottle, like your essential oils most companies are aware of that. Vitamin E should be in a dark bottle because these are things that can oxidize with sunlight. You don't want to put them on the windowsill, in the bright light.
Yes. Yeah. I remember a patient telling me, I opened my bottle of supplements and things were kind of congealed. I'm like, where do you store your supplements? Oh, they sit on the windowsill. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Right.
That's not where you want to store them.
not only is it warm on the windowsill, but they can sort of get a sunburn. You know, it's like the ultraviolet goes through the bottle, and it has damaging effects, you know,
right,
over time. So it's like you wouldn't sit on your windowsill for like 16 hours a day in midsummer, you know, with the southern exposure. So neither should your supplements in clear bottles.
Right. Let me talk about expiration dates for a minute. Not just a matter of where you store them, but expiration dates, Brad, you want to pay attention to. But, you know, it's okay with many supplements. If you go maybe a few weeks or a month past the expiration date, they're still okay.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they're probably going to lose their potency.
By the way, I just did a podcast on, it was a potpourri of things that I didn't manage to cram into my weekend show. Because there's so many stories that I sometimes just can't get them all in, especially when we have a lot of callers. And one of the stories was an in-depth study of this phenomenon of drug expiration dates. So I posed the question, you know, say, you know, you're sitting on the patio and your kid's playing and all of a sudden a wasp lands in your kid and stings your kid. And you know your kid's allergic to insects. And you start to see his face turn red. He starts to wheeze. And so you run to the bathroom and you grab the first EpiPen you can get your hands on because you know your kid's allergic and you have an EpiPen stashed everywhere, you know, in your vacation home, in your glove compartment, you know, in your apartment, everywhere you've got, you know, an extra EpiPen. And they're expensive. You know, there's been this scandal about, you know, they cost like upwards of $300 per pen and they last for 2 years. And at the end, they expire. So you look at the EpiPen as you're, you know, you look over your shoulder, your kid's gasping, and it says it expired in August of 2017. And your heart sinks because you know it's not going to work because it's expired. What do you do? Well, you run over and you jam the EpiPen into your kid's thigh because it's very likely to work. And in fact, they did some studies, particularly with EpiPens, where they found that up to 4 years after the expiration date, they contained 80% of the active ingredient. And then they looked at a wide variety of drugs, and they found that the vast majority of them had potency well beyond the expiration date. It's just that they may be a little less potent, and, you know, I wouldn't take something that's 10 years old. You know, mostly I think it's a scam by the pharmaceutical industry to get people to throw their drugs out and buy new drugs. And it's huge waste when, you know, hospitals spend billions of dollars.
You know, they should offer trade-ins. They should offer trade-ins up upon expiration. You should be able to bring it back to the pharmacy and say, renew this. Don't charge me.
Oh, no, but that would cost them money. No, that would cost them money. And, you know, that's no good. You see,
that's rich enough.
Brand new stuff.
They're rich enough.
It's just like, you know, like my car is 5 years old. It's a perfectly good car. You know, there's no expiration date on it if I take good care of it and drive it. But, you know, Detroit or, you know, nowadays I guess it's Seoul, Korea or Tokyo or, you know, Munich or Dusseldorf wants me to buy a new car every 2 years.
Well, Brad, thank you for listening to the podcast, and we thank you for your question.
So let's pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, so preview for us what we'll be talking about in part two.
Do the herbs I'm taking, will they interfere with warfarin?
Good question. And we'll tackle that in part two. So stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, our nutritionist in residence. And it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the place you can email your questions. And we'll continue with part two in just a moment. This is Intelligent Medicine.